on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, December 23rd, 2024 edition, and welcome to Christmas. It is the eve of Christmas Eve, and I hope everyone is prepared for the big holiday. And we'll be posting a fresh best of episode both tomorrow and on Christmas Day. So please be on the lookout for those. And, you know, that's for tomorrow. But, you know, this is today, and we still had market movements, and all are very important to your future, to your to what is ultimately your own path to financial freedom. That's what this is about. And, you know, we've talked a lot about saving money during these holiday seasons, as well as market trends that typically manifest during these times. And you're getting a bit of a mixed bag on that front. And, you know, we are here to unpack those for you and get you prepared for 2025. So I'm Justin Klein. And as usual, our objective is to help you become a better investor during this hour. And we do that by answering your finance and investment questions. So checking off the list of questions that you have, but also bringing challenges to the table, data to the table, lessons to the table, so that you can make consistent, good decisions with your money. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics as usual. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hi, my name is Raj from New York. I had a question about CAVA, C-A-V-A. It's been on a downtrend, kind of watching it for a while. So I wanted to see if it's a good entry point. I don't want to jump into it. I want to wait until the stock comes down further. So please let us know. Thank you.
All right, looking at CAVA, this is an operator of chain restaurants, mainly Mediterranean fast casual food. So it's things that are healthy and Mediterranean in their style. So it's CAVA and Zoe's Kitchen are their two brands. And this is a recent IPO back in the middle of last year. And let's see, what day was that? It was in June. Yeah, June of last year. And they were losing money in 2021 and 2022, but they made money last year, supposed to make a 50 cents per share in total this year and 62 cents per share next year. But it's $117 stock. So if they're not even, they're talking a 200 times forward looking multiple. That's pretty steep, especially when their growth, it's good, mid 30s on the revenue side, earnings over 100% looking backwards, but looking forward, only 23% for next year. So you're talking about, you know, a 20-30% growth rate. And that's all because this is these are very small numbers. Last quarter, revenues were $243 million. So you extrapolate that out, they're about $1 billion run rate in sales, and it's a $13.5 billion market cap. So you're talking about over 13 times sales. And, you know, the good thing is it's profitable. They don't have a lot of debt in their balance sheet. Those are the positives. But they are issuing more shares. I don't like that. And the multiples are just way too high. Like I said, 15 times trailing revenue, enterprise value to EBIT around 116. 16 is about market, you know, average. So it's 116. And this is now in a downtrend. You move over to a chart, and this peaked out, had a big reversal at 170. I'm assuming that was on an earnings announcement. And it's been going lower ever since, now down to 117. So from 170 in November, early November, and now we're at 117 in a little over a month. So pretty massive move, down 31% off its 52-week high. I think this is just the start of a repricing lower multiples. This needs to be cut at least in half for you to even start thinking about buying this name. So I wouldn't own it probably until the 30s. That's when it becomes a reasonable valuation. Right now, even after a 31% drop, it's egregiously overvalued. And yeah, growth is great, but I'm not paying this multiple anywhere close to it for CAVA. C-A-V-A is the symbol. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes as we power through into Christmas Eve tomorrow. And our main focus point concerns this headline. New retirees may need to rethink the 4% rule. And this is all coming from Morningstar's projections of stock, bond, and cash returns. And there's a projection that there's now a new lower safe withdrawal rate. Safe withdrawal rate. So we'll look at that topic. We have others on the docket as well. One is in regards to a new article. I love, this is one of my favorite market commentators, Mohammed El Arian. He's the former co-CEO of PIMCO. And I love hearing bond guys and their view on macro policy, macro trends, because that typically will drive the returns of various asset classes. So I want to dig into his latest post, and that's really about the Fed and the way that it conducts its policy. Then I want to dig into the chip war in China that we are having with China. And the question is, will it expand? Okay. Because if it does, that could have wide-ranging ramifications across the chip sector. Okay. So we'll look at that. And then lastly, we have time, the auto market in China and how the massive amount of EVs being pumped out of China is shaping that market and other auto markets around the world. We'll also get to your voice bank questions. One is in regards to Micron Technologies, as well as Old Dominion Freight Lines, ODFL, and most importantly, your live calls. So don't hesitate to give us a call right now at 888-99-CHART. But we're heading into a short break, and on the other side, I'll touch briefly on today's market activity and then play more of your questions here on Invest Talk. So my phone lines are open, waiting for your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually.
Hmm.
At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Christmas is almost here, and on the chance that Santa's too busy to submit your finance and investment questions to Justin and Luke, maybe you should do that now. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, let's take a quick look at the market today. It was started off negative, but we ended positive overall. The Dow was up 66 points. The NASDAQ was up nearly 1% on the day. S&P up 0.75%. You had some big movers. Apple was the strongest, had the most influence on the index, up 2.5%. NVIDIA edged up higher a little bit as well. And if you look at the heat map, you're talking about, NVIDIA was up 3.7%. Apple was up a little bit. It was kind of a mixed bag, to be honest with you. You had some of the bigger names, Broadcom up 5%. Walmart was down, however. That was kind of the biggest loser on the day. but we gradually gained strength. We had that sell-off last week. We got through OPEX, the largest OPEX that we've ever had when it comes to notional value of options. And so as that was being unwound, that certainly was a factor in the market sell-off. And now we head into the new year, and then we have the second largest OPEX expiration, which I believe is in January. So I think that will generally allow the market to remain relatively strong, at least through kind of the first week of next year. And that will be beyond that. You know, we shall see. Is there another catalyst that will bring the markets down and allow some vulnerability in the first quarter to come to fruition? So certainly watch for that. But between now and year end, I expect the markets to have a modest float higher, especially after the last couple of days. You know, big reversal on Friday and a follow through today. So that's where we're at in markets. You have the dollar strong, despite the fact that you had the durable goods report that came in weaker than expected. And so you'd expect that to really hurt markets, but it really didn't at all. You just saw a rally throughout the day. So that was the market as we head into the holiday. Markets open tomorrow, but closed half day. So just a heads up there. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. However, YouTube is most important. And that's where you can see my face, you can see my charts, etc. And we get questions via the comment section over there. So let's go tackle one of those. Randy23 says, would love to hear opinion on energy transfer as a top pick for next year. ET is the symbol. Let me pull this up here. Now, energy transfer, this is one of those pipeline companies engaged in natural gas midstream, liquid transportation, and storage business in the United States. So, you know, overall, this is, I've said this before, ET is a good name. Now, what you have to understand is this is a limited partnership. This is ET Energy Transfer LP. So when you go and look at this yield, 6.78%, understand in a tax-deferred account like a 401k, like an IRA or a Roth IRA, this is going to be problematic from a tax perspective. So if you want to invest in those type of accounts, I would avoid it. If you are investing in a taxable account, you just have to understand that these dividends are going to be taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. Any limited partnership is like that. So I don't know if you're in a high tax bracket, a middling tax bracket, a low tax bracket. That's a question for you. So you have to adjust that 6.7, 6.8% that it's currently paying now to that tax rate compared to a lot of other companies in similar business that maybe pay a lower dividend, but are qualified dividends, meaning they're only taxed at that 15 or 20% tax rate, typically much lower than a lot of people are taxed at. And so understand that dynamic. But outside of the tax implications of investing in a limited partnership, it's a very solid business with good profitability, good cash flow. It does have a lot of debt because it's capital intensive, but that means that if things go well and there's more flows moving through their pipelines and they're storing more product, then they tend to earn higher fees. So, and that can be good with the amount of what is called balance sheet leverage that they have. So it can cut both ways. I think there are better, there's another company that we've owned for clients for a long time. They pay qualified dividends. It's not a limited partnership. And that's what I would be going for, is something that pays more qualified dividends. I don't have to worry about the tax implications there. So I like ET, but I don't love the tax implications. And that's why I would look for others within the space. Now let's keep going. Here comes another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin, Luke. This is Vishnu calling from New Jersey. I want to know what's your opinion on Old Dominion Freight Line, ODFL. Thank you.
All right. Looking at ODFL, this is a great business. And they provide less than truckload interregional and national motor carrier services. So it basically is in the logistics business when it comes to trucking. And they've been around a long time. And they have a great business, great profitability. Return on equity is 29%. They have pretty much no debt on their balance sheet, free cash flow of $1 billion on about a $38 billion market cap. So not an amazing free cash flow yield, only about 2.5% there. But it, like I said, it's very profitable. They buy back shares and it's sold off from about 230 recently down to about 180, kind of the low end of the range that it's been in for the last, call it 2 years. And so I kind of like that. I kind of like that it's near the low end of the range and it's a great business. What are they doing? Are they with that cash flow? Yeah, they're buying back shares. So I like this. I think this is a buying opportunity down here. Now, could it go a little lower? I would love it at about 160. It's at 180 now. That's the area that I would back up the truck. Pun intended here, right? Because they're in the trucking business. But that's why I'd be a bit patient on it. Maybe sell some puts down at 160. That'd be a great way to do it. Now we're moving into a break. Still to come, my focus point and more answers to your questions. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
The numbers are in. InvestTalk, now with more than 60 million downloads. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your finance and investment questions 24/7. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, is it time to rethink the 4% rule that most retirees tend to follow when it comes to understanding how much they can spend in retirement? Well, that is what Morningstar research is saying that now the new safe withdrawal rate is 3.7%. And it's pretty interesting to see them come out with this this prognostication, shall we say. But, you know, this is, I get this question asked all the time, you know, what about the 4% rule? And, you know, for everyone else out there, the 4% rule is simply whatever your nest egg is, whatever your dollar amount in savings is at retirement, you take 4% of that. And then in the first year, and then you adjust that for inflation each year. And then you should have enough money for 30 years of retirement. Okay. And this was tested based on returns from 1926 to 1993. And it showed that you had a 90% probability of having money left over after three decades of retirement. And this is based on a portfolio of 50% stocks and 50% bonds. Now, the first thing you have to understand about this rule is that it's pretty conservative. So 4% is a reasonable starting point, but you could probably do more in most cases. A lot depends on the future path of asset returns. But, you know, you don't want to underspend, but you don't want to overspend either. So there's a sweet spot here. And 4% is, once again, more on the conservative side to make sure that you're not overspending. Now, how do we tweak the 4% rule? How do you adjust it for the current market conditions? Now, Morningstar is doing one thing, which is saying, okay, what is the expected future returns of assets? But what about the spending side? That's the investment side. What about the spending side? Well, generally, if you spend less later in retirement, inflation-adjusted returns, then you can spend more in early retirement years. So that's one way to squeeze a little more juice out of your retirement planning, is to say, I'm going to spend less in the latter years. Now, a lot of that does depend, though, on your health, how healthy you are, and whether those latter years are likely to be difficult from a health perspective or relatively smooth. And this is where long-term care insurance can be a big factor. And we always encourage, especially those people that have money locked up into a universal or whole life policy, an annuity, to kind of move those within that life insurance company from those type of policies to a long-term care policy. It's a good way to utilize those type of assets. In addition, it's about maximizing your Social Security benefits. Because remember, that is, for most people, the clearest, easiest, guaranteed income that you will get. Because most people don't get pensions anymore. And this is your government pension, basically, right? And so delaying until age 70 usually allows for lower withdrawal rates in the latter years. Yeah, you lean heavier on your investment portfolios early on, especially in your early to mid 60s, and obviously in late 60s as well. But that allows 70 at 70 and beyond for those withdrawals to be relatively meager. And that's one way, one critique I have with a 4% rule. It's a generalization, and it has nothing to do with your lifestyle goals, right? We don't retire in order to take the 4% and forget it, right? We retire because we want to do the things that we want to do as opposed to things that we have to do. And that is that should be everyone's goal. And so then for us, and this is how we deal with our clients, we work backwards. Okay, what type of money are you spending today? What's your budget? Are you going to spend more or less in retirement in order to meet your goals? And then we say, okay, in order to meet those retirement goals, we want to work backwards and say, what changes do we need to make today? Excuse me. Okay, so that's one way I would adjust this thinking. And then also making sure you're planning of when you take Social Security. So a common strategy that we see with our clients is you have one spouse that was a lower earner, and they take their Social Security early at, say, 62. And then the biggest earner waits, usually at least till their full retirement age and ideally until 70. And then they claim, get the biggest amount. And then the other spouse files for spousal benefits, which is roughly half of the higher earning spouse. And that's a common strategy to maximize Social Security. And so these are things that an advisor is gonna help you with, should help you with. So it's what we help clients with. And it allows them to, lean on their investment portfolios, which is fine, right? That we're managing those as well. And most of our clients have, seven figures or more in assets in order to lean on. And so that's a common strategy that can help the retirees really create a withdrawal rate that fits their lifestyle and their current financial situation. So 4% rule, once again, it's a great starting place to think about your withdrawal rate, but there are a lot of factors that go into whether that should be higher or lower. Now, we're taking 2 days off for Christmas holiday, but we will be posting fresh Best of Invest Talk episodes online. So please tell your friends and let them know that they can find our podcast in video form over on YouTube as well. Now, we're ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Let's face it, Invest Talk listeners. Life can be unpredictable, but securing your family's financial future doesn't have to be. That's where Fabric by Gerber Life comes in. Fabric offers modern, flexible term life insurance designed to fit your lifestyle. Whether you're planning for the future or just want a little extra peace of mind, Fabric makes protecting what matters most simple and stress-free. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right from your couch, all online and on your schedule. You could be covered in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Even if you have life insurance through your employer, it may not offer enough protection for your family, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. Fabric has flexible, high-quality policies that fit your family and your budget, like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Fabric has partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families like yours for over 50 years. There's no risk, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/investtalk. That's meetfabric.com/investtalk. meetfabric.com/investtalk. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
Looking to connect with your local audience? AdManager.fm makes it easy to reach consumers through podcasts, radio, and music streaming. Need an audio ad? Our AI professional studio helps you create one in minutes. From crafting the perfect message to launching your campaign, it takes just 4 to 5 minutes. No hassle, no waiting, just instant access to the ears of your local customers. Visit AdManager.fm. Your voice, your audience, your success.
Christmas is almost here. You've got finance and investment questions, but you don't need to wrap them for Justin or Luke. All you have to do is call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Well, enjoy your show, Justin, Luke. I was looking for a good energy company, maybe a good oil and gas producer. And I had a couple here that I've heard some good things about, and I was wondering if you could maybe do a comparison and tell me which one you like best. First one is EQT Company. Most people have heard of them. And also Coterra, C-T-R-A. Hope to hear you. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Looking at C-T-R-A as well as EQT. And EQT is a independent natural gas production company. It's mainly operating the Marcellus and Utica shale plays in the Appalachian Basin. And this is one of the stronger energy names, mainly because it's focused on natural gas, and natural gas prices are moving higher. And so that's why you continue to see the relative strength there. Now, Coterra is a bit different. Okay, this is CTRA is the symbol, and it does have natural gas exposure, but it's more of an oil and gas play. Okay, and they operate in the Permian Basin, West Texas, Southeast New Mexico, etc. They do have some Marcellus shale plays as well as in the Anadarko Basin, and so they do have higher natural gas exposure than a lot of other shale companies. So that's a positive. But as a pure play natural gas company, I would go with EQT. There's definitely some better strength there. And you're starting to see the use of natural gas in more applications because it's generally cheaper. It's very abundant. And, there's just structurally lower costs for natural gas. As long as there's the pipeline to move it, then you'll see in the oil patch. And so that's why we tend to lean on companies that have more natural gas exposure. But if you're looking for the pure plays, you want to go with an EQT. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on the Fed and the fact that the policy trends are a bit, I would say, all over the place. Okay. And Federal Reserve Jerome Powell, chairman, said, quote, "We don't guess and we don't speculate and we don't assume." And he was speaking in regards to a question about the new Trump incoming policies about not inflation, but tariffs, right? That will drive inflation higher. Now, first off, I agree with him to that there you don't want to speculate on what that policy will ultimately be, because there's a lot of variables there. We know that in Washington, you can have a lot of plans, but when it comes to putting them into action, there are a lot of mouths to feed. There are a lot of interests that need to be met in order to get some things done. And when it comes to where that will ultimately come out, that's hard to speculate on. And I agree with him on that front. However, the lack of clarity and the kind of ability to flip-flop is in some ways destabilizing markets, right? When, typically the Fed is slow to start an easing or a tightening policy. And that means that there's plenty of time for the market to start to price in a shift in policy. But what you've seen over the past 6 months or so is that the Fed has begun an easing cycle, and they're more quickly starting a tightening cycle. And so that's why part of the reason why you aren't seeing the requisite follow through of a Fed rate cut to other parts of the market. Because the Treasury market, more longer dated securities, 10-year, for example, which typically are tied to mortgages, they will move, that will typically move based on longer term projections of where Fed policy will be. And so if there is a shortened cutting cycle, that means that you're starting from a higher base when they go and tighten policy. And that keeps longer rates higher, the 10-year higher. And so that's why I think we are in this period where, hey, rates are headed higher. We're not going to see 3% mortgages, 4% mortgages, even a 5% mortgage is probably unlikely for a while outside of a major crisis. And so this is the new regime that we are in, that the Fed will flip-flop more. There will be more contradictions because the economic data is unlikely to be as straightforward. So they'll be more cautious at being hard and fast about anything, especially because what's inflation doing? It just bottomed at 2.5%. They didn't get to their 2% target before they started to ease policy. So this is the new environment that we are in. That Fed days are likely to be more volatile in both directions. Because it's going to be more, even more important is what the dot plots say, what the Fed chair says, and whether they are using their rhetoric to de facto tighten policy or loosen policy in the future. Because remember, the market always prices in. And so when the Fed says one thing that is a bit more dovish or a bit more hawkish, that will be quickly priced in and create higher levels of volatility. So it's a new era. And we've talked about this for a while that we're going to get roughly 100 basis points in cuts, maybe a little more during this easing cycle. Think about the previous easing cycles. They were hundreds of basis points, right? Going from 4% all the way to 0, or 6% all the way to 3. Those were the type of policy loosening cycles that we had, because we were in a secular deflationary environment, or disinflationary environment at the very least. Now we are in a secular inflationary environment. And you must adjust your calculations accordingly. Let's go back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, InvestTalk. Bill from Philadelphia here. Wanted to call about Micron Technologies, ticker symbol MU. They just posted earnings, and the stock fell about 15-16%. I know in the past you guys were for the stock, and it's around, I believe, 87-88 right now. Wanted to see if this would be a good opportunity to pick some up. I have some in my portfolio as well, and might be thinking about adding to it, and wanted to get your thoughts. Love what you guys do. Looking forward to hearing your answer on the show. Thank you.
All right. This is Micron, and I believe we had a call last week about this. But yeah, it did fall on earnings, down 43% from its 52-week high, which was up around $157 per share. Now we're at about $90 per share, $89.72 at the close today. And earnings next year are supposed to be at $11.46. So if that's the case, then this is trading at about a high single-digit multiple. Now, those estimates are coming down, so probably won't be quite as good. But for everyone else out there, they make RAM. They make flash memory for consumer devices, computers, servers, etc. and just the demand for electronics across the board continue to be higher, both on the B2B level, building out cloud computing and AI infrastructure, but also consumers. Consumers are still flush with cash, and they have good balance sheets, and they're spending more money on electronics. And so the demand for their products remains relatively robust. You're talking about operating margins at about 15%. Now, one thing to understand that this does tend to be volatile. So it goes through periods where the margins are negative, but they just went through that period and it is trending higher. So I like that their balance sheet is relatively clean, only about $5 billion in net debt. So a pretty clean balance sheet there. Enterprise value to EBITDA looking forward is at about 6x. So that's pretty cheap. And so I think we are at support. We're at the 100-week moving average. So we had a nice reset on this pullback. And so I'm going to give Micron a thumbs up. Now let's go play two in a row now at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin. This is Steve from St. Paul. Love the show. I'm sure I'm not the only person thinking about this today, but innovative industrial properties, you know, had quite the crash today. And I know you hold that in some of your strategies. And I was just curious how you're thinking about it. I've got a couple hundred that I actually had some in-the-money calls on today, and now they're out of the money. So I'm going to have, it's pretty small. I think it's about, you know, 1% of my portfolio. You know, wondering if I should hold and wait for that to recover, or if you think they're going to have additional kind of renter problems down the road. Look forward to hearing the answer. Thanks.
All right. Looking at innovative industrial properties. Yeah, this is a name we've owned for a long time. It's been up and down, been pretty volatile, but, you know, it's a smaller name, about $2 billion market cap. So volatility is to be expected, but it does pay about a 10% yield now. That yield will likely come down a bit, but mainly that's because their recent news, why it's fallen out of bed here from around $100 per share down to about 70 over the past few days, is the fact that their largest tenant defaulted on their rents. It's about 17% of revenue, but the stock's down about 30%. To us, it's drastically overblown. Why is that? This has happened before. They've had defaults on these facilities, and what do? They either kick them out and re-rent them, or they renegotiate the leases. My guess is they kick them out and they find new tenants. The asset's still there. It's still licensed. Okay, and for everyone else out there, the reason why they have volatile tenants is because they operate in the cannabis space, medical cannabis. So they own grow facilities, they own dispensaries, things like that. And naturally, that's a business that's up and down. But it's a business, or it's an industry that generally is growing, and there's more demand, especially, like I said, for licensed facilities, which they go through the process of getting licensed. And so operators can go in and just set up shop without having to worry too much about the regulations. And so that is what allows them to charge above average rents for if these facilities were used for other purposes. But that's why you get, you know, high returns and high dividends, et cetera. But you get periods like this where you get defaults. It happens. But guess what? Like I said, the properties are not gone. They're not unlicensed. They've just been defaulted on. That's it. Happens all the time. Happened before with the same company. Right? And they renegotiate, they release, and things move on. And so that's why I think this is more of a buying opportunity than something to be scared of. Now, still high risk. You have to realize that. But I think it's way, way overblown because, like I said, the properties are still there. They didn't lose them. Okay. Thanks for the call. 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, let's talk a little bit about China and its chip war. And, you know, China spent $41 billion on wafer fabrication equipment this year, a 29% increase. That's 40% of the global total and up from about $24 billion in 2021. What it shows is that Beijing is aggressively expanding its production of, let's say, legacy chips, chips that are been around for a while. They're not part of the AI revolution, but they go into a lot of manufactured goods. And their overall strategy is to roll out state support, have aggressive pricing, and play the long game. This is what they do in almost every industry, right? Undercut their competitors and try to drive them out of business. And Chinese foundries have increased their global share in these legacy chips from 14% in 2017 to 18% in 2023. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a pretty big growth for an industry that is pretty mature. And if you look at Chinese customers, they've sourced 53% of their chips from Chinese foundries in 2023. That's up from 48% in 2017. So you're talking about the manufacturers in China buying more Chinese-made chips. And so if these are flooding the markets, you're going to talk about putting in danger companies like Texas Instruments. But the question is the U.S. going to allow this to continue, right? We've already cracked down on the higher-end chips. Will we spread those restrictions to lower-end chips? And the odds, I think, are pretty good. So that could mean upside for domestic manufacturers of maybe not the highest grade chips, but a lot of these older, lower-tech chips that continue to be produced worldwide. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here, is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I am really trying to get exposure to the nuclear energy play. So I found a stock through an ETF, which I'll explain in a second, Oklo, O-K-L-O. But the reason why I'm interested in this is I found this in the NLR Van Eck ETF fund. I think this is kind of like a high risk, high reward. So I wanted to know your 2 cents about this. I already have CCJ Camco. The last minor question is, I see in the Van Eck ETF NLR that Camco is actually a different stock ticker than the CCJ. It's CO something else. So could you also just describe that difference? Thank you for everything and have a great day. Bye.
Well, that's pretty easy on the Camco front. It's a Canadian company, so it's listed on the Canadian exchange. So they can own it in various forms. You can buy it on our domestic exchange as CCJ, but you can also buy it on the Canadian exchange. So that's probably what you're getting the difference in the ultimate the ticker symbol. Now, when it comes to Oklo, I like that you're looking at these ETFs like NLR and trying to find kind of the best exposures within the space. Now, we've owned Cameco for a long time, so we still like it. We also own another name in here. It's actually in the top five of this ETF. So there are other ways to gain access to the nuclear space beyond just the uranium plays. So there are other options, and this is one of them, Oklo. It looks like it's 13 largest within this ETF. And it moved higher in September, October, from a low around $5 per share, $6 per share, all the way up to a recent high around 27. Now we're at about 22. So it is consolidating bullishly. So the technicals are good. But for everyone else out there, is they are in the small modular reactor space. So this is a good name for exposure, but it loses money. okay? And it's likely to continue to lose money next year and doesn't have much revenue. And so the worry here is that their technology, there are a lot of different types of small modular reactors. And the big question for investors is, what will the government get behind? Because that's going to be most important. The government is going to choose winners here. What technology makes sense to get behind and develop and approve. And Oklo could be one of those, but maybe not either. Right? So I rather go with other more established companies that have some revenue. There's no revenue here. And that isn't just pure speculation. So I think you have better opportunities, better risk versus rewards. This is very high risk, obviously high reward, but it's already gone up a lot. So I would be patient for, at the bare minimum, a broader sell-off back into, you know, the $8 to $10 range. That's where I might pick up Oklo. But until then, I'm staying away from it because I rather own something that is currently profitable and makes money. So I'd keep searching that portfolio from NLR. Thanks for the call. There's another question from our Invest Talk YouTube channel. Ingar Banai says, can you please go through the technicals of DORM, D-O-R-M, Dorman Products, if it's a thumbs up? What's the price range to pick it up? Now, this is a $130 stock. Let's go look at the fundamentals real quick. So DORM has earnings that continue to go up in a pretty dramatic way. 52% earnings growth this year, 9% expected next year. They supply automotive replacement parts and fasteners for the automotive aftermarket. Now, this is a business that boomed kind of post-COVID as the supply of new cars was restricted due to chip shortages and plant shutdowns, etc. And so it made more sense for companies or individuals to replace the broken parts in their cars than buy new ones. And so there was a lot of demand for them. Now, the technicals, you asked the main question was, what were the technicals? They're fine. Consolidating, pulled back to the 50-day moving average. Nothing wrong with technicals at all. If you want to buy it here, this would be a good place to buy it. But do understand that there are some risks that if the demand for replacement parts wanes, this could easily change trends. But for right now, the technicals are solid. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number by scheduling a portfolio review with us by heading over to investtalk.com. And it's a free and confidential service. Now, once again, we're taking a couple days off for Christmas break. We'll be back on Thursday. So I hope you enjoy the best of Invest Talk episodes over the next couple of days. And we'll catch you on the other side of the holiday. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Merry Christmas.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights